Reading from above, 11 Canto, chapter 5, verse 8. Vedanti te nyonyam upasitas triyo.
Vedanti te nyonyam upasitas triyo.
Graheshu maitunya pareshu chashisha.
Graheshu maitunya pareshu chashisha.
Yajanta shristana vidana dakshinam.
Yajanta shristana vidana dakshinam.
Rajai param vinanti pasuna tad vidha.
Rajai param vinanti pasuna tad vidha.
Vedanti.
Vedanti.
Speak.
Speak.
Te.
Te.
They.
They.
Anonyam.
Anonyam.
Among each other.
Among each other.
Upasitastriya.
Upasitastriya.
Engaged in worshipping women.
Engaged in worshipping women.
Graheshu.
Graheshu.
In their homes.
In their homes.
Maitunapareshu.
Maitunapareshu.
Dedicated to sex only.
Dedicated to sex only.
Sha.
Sha.
And. Ashisha.
Ashisha.
Blessings.
Blessings.
Yajanti.
Yajanti.
They worship.
They worship.
Ashishta.
Ashishta.
Without discharging.
Without discharging.
Annavidana.
Annavidana.
Distribution of food.
Distribution of food.
Dakshinam.
Dakshinam.
Gifts.
Gifts.
Vityai,
Vityai,
for their own livelihood.
For their own livelihood.
Param,
Param,
only.
Only.
Gnanti,
Gnanti,
they murder.
They murder.
Pasun,
Pasun,
animals.
Animals.
Atadvida,
Atadvida,
in ignorance.
In ignorance.
Translation of materialistic followers of Vedic rituals, giving up the worship of the Lord, instead practically worship their wives, and thus their homes become dedicated to sex life. Such materialistic householders encourage one another in such whimsical behavior. Understanding ritualistic sacrifice as a necessary item for bodily maintenance, they perform unauthorized ceremonies in which there is no distribution of foodstuffs or charity to the brahmanas and other respectable persons. Instead, they cruelly slaughter animals such as goats without any understanding of the dark consequences of their activities. Therefore, false pride is certainly not complete without sex indulgence. Thus, lusty materialistic householders are not attracted to worshipping saintly persons, but rather worship their wives as a source of constant sex pleasure. The mentality of such condemned persons is described by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita. Idam adya maya labdham imam prapsye manoratam idam astidam api me bhavishyati punardhanam. So much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. Generally, materialistic householders consider themselves to be very religious. In fact, by earning money to support a band of relatives, they consider themselves to be more pious than the irresponsible sadhus who do not struggle to maintain family members. In worshipping the material body, they are contemptuous of the humble brahmanas who are generally not very advanced in economic development. They consider such so-called beggars to be unworthy objects of charity and instead perform sacrifices only for the enchantment of the false prestige of their own family members. Madhvacharya instead in this regard, upeksha vaiharim te tubutva yajya patanchada. In spite of proudly considering themselves to be great performers of religious ceremonies, those who neglect the Lord and His devotees certainly fall down. Such foolish persons sometimes bless each other by saying, "May you be blessed with wealth of gorgeous flower gardens, sandalwood pulp, and beautiful women." Men who are controlled by the nature of women become exactly like women. Materialistic women are uninterested in devotional service to the Supreme Lord and strive for their own selfish happiness. Therefore, they eagerly take service from their husbands and become most discouraged if the husband prefers to serve the personality of Godhead. Being lost in such a fool's paradise, both husband and wife mutually encourage each other in temporary happiness. They do not like to speak or hear about the pastimes of the Lord, but prefer to discuss their own families. Still, the devotees of the Lord, being mature in the mode of goodness, are always ready to act mercifully towards such conditioned souls who are just like tame animals. When the devotees of the Lord preach that human beings should not slaughter animals, materialistic householders are very often astonished and inquire if it is actually possible to subsist on a vegetarian diet, thus being completely ignorant of the material Mode of goodness was to speak of spiritual knowledge. Such condemned materialists have no hope beyond the mercy of the devotees of the Lord. Translation, the materialistic followers of Vedic rituals giving up the worship of the Lord, instead practically worship their wives and thus their homes become dedicated to sex life. Such materialistic households encourage one another in such whimsical behavior. Understanding ritualistic sacrifice as a necessary item for bodily maintenance, they perform unauthorized ceremonies in which there is no distribution of foodstuffs or charity to the brahmanas and other respectable persons. Instead, they cruelly slaughter animals, such as goats, without any understanding of the dark consequences of their activities. So this is a further description of deviation from karma. The rules are prescribed for such activities in the Vedas, and if one follows properly, there is hope that one will advance. If one does not follow properly, then one is subject to all sorts of deviations. So the main principle, as I said, is that included in this worship, one has to worship the Supreme Lord. And at the beginning of this section was mentioned that if a person does not worship the Supreme Lord, then he goes to hell. So because of that lack of worship, even if it is not prominent worship, that worship has to be there. If that worship is not there, then gradually all sorts of discrepancies creep into the activities. So the previous verse describes how one becomes affected by rajas, or the mode of passion. So even if one is a brahmana, because the brahmanas are the persons who perform all of these rituals, even if one is a brahmana, supposedly situated in sattva, if he neglects the Supreme Lord and carries out his activities, then his tendency is to fall into rajagun, and from rajagun to tamagun. And he may be continuing to do these activities, which appear to be very elevated, but actually they're all condemned. So that is what is described here. They fall into rajagun, and they do these activities, they neglect the Lord, and then they become attached to family life and wife and family members and relatives, and they encourage each other in that direction. When they do the ceremonies, they do not distribute food, they do not give dakshina to the recipient of the or the performer of the sacrifice, the priest of the sacrifice. They do not distribute goods to all the people. We'll see many descriptions in the Bhagavatam of kings when they do the sacrifice, and they will distribute items not only to the brahmanas but to all the people. And even in the Vaishyas, we see Nanda Maharaj, when his son was born, then he distributed gifts to all the people, the brahmins, the Vaishyas, Kshatriyas and Shudras, everyone. He gave gifts and items to them. So this is the proper method of doing these ceremonies. There must be distribution of wealth and other goods. But because these people are very stingy and greedy, they will minimize all of these different elements. Why have they become so greedy and whatever? They've gone into the mode of passion. In the mode of passion, one is very attached to the results of one's work, and one does not want to give up those results. So they will think in terms of money. I will have to do a sacrifice or a ceremony and I have to give out some money, so I will try to minimize the money expense. Do it, but I'll minimize the money. So let us cut off this expense. Let us cut off that expense. So this way they will not give any dakshina to the performers of the sacrifice or other people, because let us just do the sacrifice without this. That is their consideration. But this is actually part of the ceremony. So in this way they don't perform it properly. And even more sinful is the fact that in ignorance, atapmada, without knowing the proper method or the proper use of the that, they kill the animals. So in Vedic sacrifice, there is explicit killing of animals. There is gomeda and aswameda, etc. That is sacrifice of cows and sacrifice of horses and whatever. So these are mentioned in the Vedas. Taking advantage of that, they carry out this slaughter of the animals. But because they lack knowledge, they do not get any good result from it. So there is a more elaborate description of this in the story of King Paranjana. And this, of course, is an allegorical story. He's not a historical person. But this story is told to show the futility of material life. So, in this story, it wasn't Paranjana. It wasn't him. It was the king. And then, because of this, the Narada Muni told the story of King Paranjana. So the king was absorbed in sacrifices. And then he got to see the result of the sacrifice. What happened? After he died, then all the animals came and they began attacking him and biting him and torturing him and etc. So this way he got to see the result of the sacrifice. Instead of going to heaven as a result of the sacrifices, he ended up in hell. Why? Because it was unnecessary. His sacrifice was not done in the proper way. So it all became unnecessary. So he unnecessarily killed animals, even though it was considered by he thought it was sacrifice, and therefore he would get good results. But he got bad results because he did not have the proper understanding. He did not have the proper motives behind all of this. Similarly, we understand that Buddha rejected the Vedas because the people were following the Vedas and carrying out unnecessary slaughter of animals. And therefore he said, we should be non-violent, let us give up the Vedas. And we find even in the discussion of Lord Chaitanya with the Jankazi there, he says that in Kali Yuga, one should give up the animal sacrifice. This is one of the aspects of Kali Yuga, to give up animal sacrifice. Because the people are unqualified to do it. If one sinks into Rajagun and Tamagun and one still performs these sacrifices, they are of no value. The people have material motivations behind all of this, and therefore they don't get any good results. Rather, they end up with misery. So this is the danger of these type of activities. The activities of karma, one can fall down into the lower modes of material nature as a result of misapplication of the rules. And the original cause is neglect of the Supreme Lord or offense to the Supreme Lord. So if they maintain worship of the Supreme Lord, that guarantees that they will have some sort of detachment from material results. Why is that so? Because Supreme Lord Vishnu is in charge of Sattva-guna. So by worshipping him, one at least can go to Sattva-guna. Of course, the Supreme Lord is Nirguna by nature. So therefore, one can actually transcend the gunas if one absorbs oneself in the Supreme Lord. So if one is really sattvic, one will become detached from the results of actions, worship of devatas. So it's described in Bhagavad Gita, the different types of worship of people in the gunas. So those in the mode of ignorance, of course, worship pretas and bhutas, ghosts. Those in the mode of passion worship rakshasas. Those in the mode of goodness worship devatas. But generally, we think of people worship devatas that have material desires. Or people in the mode of sattva have less material desires. So therefore, the understanding is that the people in the mode of sattva worship devatas, but with detachment. They are nishkama in their worship. So they don't worship them with desires for material results. So if one maintains sattva and performs these sacrifices, etc., then that is permissible. Of course, the next question to be asked is that if one is detached from the results, why do we want to perform these sacrifices anyway, which maintain one's material bondage? And the answer is ultimately, they shouldn't. They should give them up. So therefore, when one goes to jnana, one gives up karma. If one is qualified for jnana, one gives up the duties of karma. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita. If one is not qualified, one must continue the duties. If one is qualified by detachment, one must give up all these different rituals and ceremonies, etc. So therefore, if one comes to sattva and one becomes detached, then one becomes qualified for jnana, then one gives all of this up. That is the proper method. So this is a little bit of a complicated method to follow for people, and people are bound to be confused. And therefore, this gradual elevation to karmakanda and jnana is rejected in the Bhagavatam as a practical means. And instead of that, we have simply worship of the Supreme Lord and hearing the pastimes of the Supreme Lord and chanting the Lord's name. These are considered to be the best processes for elevation of the jiva in Kali Yuga. So that is the main topic of Bhagavatam. One may ask the question, of course, is that why is it that in the Bhagavatam we have Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, and then in the 11th canto we will have discussion of karma, discussion of yoga, discussion of jnana. And in fact, jnana becomes very prominent in the 11th canto. We examine the chapters of this very prominent jnana, and that jnana even states the impersonal nature of God and merging into God, etc. So Vishnu Chakravarti, of course, has classified the different cantos of the Bhagavatam according to the subject matters, the 10 subject matters of Puranas. So moksha, or liberation, is one of the subjects of Puranas. So 11th canto is moksha, because there's a very strong tendency for moksha. And 12th canto is, there is the discussion of destruction. That is the another topic of the among the 10 things. But we find that these topics are at the end, and discussion of Krishna and his pastimes, which is asraya, which is the 10th subject, is actually in the middle. It's not at the end. It's 10th canto, then we have 11th and 12th. So the jnanis will say, well, jnana is superior to bhakti because jnana comes afterwards. We have bhakti in 10th canto, then we have jnana. So the process is karma, bhakti, and then jnana. And then we get impersonal liberation. That's the highest thing. So this is what they can argue. One could argue the same way in Bhagavad Gita, because we see that karma yoga is in the first six chapters, bhakti is in the second six chapters, and jnana is in the last six chapters. And again, the process of it. Look, jnana is the highest because it's at the end. This is the conclusion. Jnana is the conclusion. And to make it even stronger, in the 12th canto, when Sukadeva ends his discussion, and then it goes back to Suta Goswami speaking to the sages in Naimisharanya, he asks Parikshit, Parikshit, you understood everything. Now you understand that the highest goal is to merge into Brahman. This is the conclusion of Sukadeva Goswami. The impersonalist will be very happy. Look, Sukadeva Goswami is included. He's also saying the same thing. The highest is impersonal, not Krishna. So the devotee should not become bewildered by all of this. But if one hears the impersonal interpretations, one may be bewildered. One may not have an answer to all of this. Why are they doing this? Why is Sukadeva asking, speaking like this? So the devotee has to be very attentive to what is spoken in the Bhagavatam, and not take things at surface value. So if we look very carefully in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam, we will understand what is the intention of the speaker. So in Bhagavad Gita, we can understand Krishna's intention, because he finally says that give up everything and simply surrender to me. That's his conclusion, not the conclusion to merge into Brahman. So he also said, I've taught you all about jnana. I taught you about Paramatma. Now I teach you the highest secret. And then he says, so we have to read very carefully the scriptures to find out the proper conclusions. We should not simply take some superficial meanings of things. So there are discussions of karma and they're glorified. There are discussions of jnana and that's glorified also. Discussions of yoga are also here in the 11th canto. They're also glorified. But we should not be bewildered by that. We have to find the real meaning behind all that. So in this way, though all the subject matters are covered, because it is the duty of Vyasadeva to do so, finally, the conclusion must be Krishna. Because this is how it begins, with Krishna Sut Bhagavan Swayam. And the sages are asking, how do we get deliverance? And the answer is, you hear the pastimes of Krishna. So that it's not jnana, it's not yoga, it's not karma. And of course we understand from the beginning of the Bhagavatam, this work rejects all cheating dharmas and concentrates only upon worship of the Supreme Lord with devotion. So we have to see the final conclusion in terms of the whole contents of statements, not individual statements. So in this way, we should understand that the real purpose of Bhagavatam is to present Krishna as the supreme form of God. And that by hearing his pastimes, which are reveal his special qualities of sweetness, we can develop attraction to Krishna. And more than any other form of the Lord. And that attraction will keep us engaged or attached to the Supreme Lord in spite of the obstacles that are appearing in Kali Yuga. So there are many obstacles in Kali Yuga, but if we have an attraction in the form of the Supreme Lord, who is very, very attractive, then we are saved from the obstacles of Kali Yuga. So Krishna has mercifully appeared 5,000 years ago approximately, and we have the great blessing of having access to his pastimes. Now, of course, the sages ask, well, Krishna's gone. When the sage was speaking at Naimi Saran, Krishna's gone and he's taken Dharma with him, so now Kali Yuga started. So what are you supposed to do? Well, the answer is, the Bhagavatam has risen like the sun, so just as Krishna is like the sun, so Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna. So even though Krishna is gone, and therefore Dharma is gone, and everything related to Krishna is gone, no, it's still there in the form of Bhagavatam. So if we hear about Krishna through Bhagavatam, then Krishna becomes present again. So all of his attractive pastimes and his qualities, his form, his name is present in the Bhagavatam. So one of the angas of bhakti is shravana. But the description of shravana is not hear anything, and must hear scripture. Not only we should hear scripture, but we should hear Bhagavatam. This is the scripture we should hear. Because this is the one, the primary scripture about Krishna. And not only we should hear about Krishna, we should hear about Krishna with great taste. We have to develop a taste for Krishna, or attraction for Krishna. So that type of shravana is recommended as one of the prime occupations of the devotee. So we have to hear about the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. And this way, Krishna becomes present for us. So though he has disappeared 5,000 years ago, the Bhagavatam acts as the scripture to reveal him. So though there are many scriptures, the Bhagavatam is taken as the final scripture by Acharyas. And therefore we'll find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, if we look through the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll find there are many quotations from scriptures. But if you look, most of them are from Bhagavatam. It's quoting Bhagavatam everywhere. And we see that Jiva Goswami wrote Satsandarbha, that's our main philosophical work. And what is that? It's basically a commentary on the Bhagavatam. It is an explanation of the Bhagavatam by subject matter, according to Pramana, according to realization of Paramatma, and realization of Bhagavan, Bhagavat Sundarva, Paramatma Sundarva, Tattva Sundarva, all about Krishna, Krishna Sundarva, and Rasa, Priti Sundarva. So all these subjects, and it's all on Bhagavatam, all based on Bhagavatam. So through the Bhagavatam, one can get an understanding of the different forms of God, like Paramatma and Bhagavan. We get the understanding of Krishna Swayam Bhagavan, and we get an understanding of the different relationships one can have with Krishna in Priti Sandarbha. So in this way, the study of the Bhagavatam is considered to be the ultimate study. So even if we lack knowledge of Vedas or Upanishads or other Puranas, we should not consider that any lack. If we know Bhagavatam thoroughly, we've got the conclusion of all the different shastras. We understand the position of all the other processes and all other forms of God, and we also understand the position of Krishna. So there is no lack. Therefore, the devotees should very thoroughly understand Srimad Bhagavatam. If we do that, then we don't have to worry about all these other scriptures like Vedanta Sutra and Upanishads and Puranas and Smriti Shastras and Vedas and all this. It's all secondary. So the Vedas themselves, they cover up Krishna. There are not many direct references, no direct references to Krishna in the Vedas. Of course, Upanishads, we have a few, like Gopal Tapani Upanishad or Krishna Upanishad. There's a few Upanishads that mention Krishna, but and by and large, not mentioned much. So, of course, people can attack us on that ground. The Krishna's not in the Vedas, so therefore why we should worship Krishna? Vedas are... But the conclusion is that Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from the Vedas. It is fifth Veda, Purana is fifth Veda, and of the Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate Purana. Therefore, this is the conclusion of the Vedas. So because we cannot understand the Vedas, the Veda Vyas wrote the Puranas, and finally he wrote Bhagavatam, because something was lacking. So if we get the Bhagavatam, we understand this thoroughly. We have the conclusion of the Vedas. And some things are hidden in the Vedas, therefore they're revealed in Bhagavatam. So what is hidden in the Vedas is Krishna. He's there, but hidden. So therefore this is explicitly revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we can get all knowledge from understanding Srimad Bhagavatam and position of Krishna and all the other processes in relation to that. And then we have complete knowledge. So we should not consider any lack if we concentrate our study upon this work. So that is why we have Bhagavatam class every morning, not other Puranas and not Upanishads, etc. We have Bhagavatam because this is the main work. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that, what is Srimad Bhagavatam? This is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra is the commentary on the Upanishads, which are the highest part of the Veda. Karmakanda is inferior, Jnana is superior. So Jnana is represented by Upanishads. But hard to understand. And therefore Vedavyasa wrote the Brahma Sutras. Brahma Sutras also hard to understand. But nevertheless, Upanishads are the cream of the Vedas, and Brahma Sutras are the explanation of the Upanishads, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the explanation of the Upanishads and the Vedas also, the final conclusion. So therefore, it is considered to be the natural commentary on the Vedas. Just to indicate that then, in the first verse of Bhagavatam we have an echo of Vedanta Sutra. Janma jasa yataha is mentioned there. And as well, of course, that this is a non-different from the Vedas, and therefore satyam param dhimahi is mentioned as the echo of the Gayatri Mantra. And the Gayatri Mantra is considered to be the seed of all the Vedas. So in this way, Bhagavatam is indicated to be equal to the Vedas and the explicit meaning of the Vedas. So therefore we don't have to deal so much with Vedas and Upanishads, etc. So our acharyas have written extensive commentaries on Bhagavatam. They did not write commentaries on Upanishads, other things. Of course, Baladeva is said to have written, Baladeva Dibhusan, which is much later, he is said to have written commentaries on the 10 major Upanishads, but we don't have those, so we have one Isopanishad commentary only. But Rupa and Sanatana and Jiva, Rupabhatta, they did not write on Vedic literatures or Upanishads, but they have written on Bhagavatam. So we have commentaries. And then, of course, later Vishwanath has written on Bhagavatam also. So, and of course, Lord Chaitanya, as I said, has quoted in Bhagavatam extensively. And he was very fond of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam more than any other scripture. So we should therefore absorb ourselves in the study of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this way, we can progress in our Krishna consciousness.
Okay, any questions? Upanishads writes about karma to teach jnana. Isn't Bhagavad Gita considered to be the essence of even all the Upanishads? And Bhagavad Gita teaching the inclusion to be surrendered to the Supreme Law, thus we could conclude the essence of Upanishad is surrendering to the Supreme Law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's called Gita Upanishad, so in that sense also is Upanishad. Of course, it's not classed as an Upanishad, because Upanishads are part of the Vedas, and Bhagavad Gita is part of Itihas, part of Mahabharata, so in that sense it's not Upanishad technically. But it is called Upanishad because it has taken the subject matter of the Upanishads, not only Upanishads, but even from the Karmakanda section. So therefore we have karma represented, we have yoga represented, we have jnana represented, and we have bhakti represented. So it takes everything. So we can say that the Bhagavad Gita is representing all of the Vedas, and not just the Upanishads, but all of the Vedas, coming to the conclusion. So the subject of the Upanishads is all of this. There's karma, there's jnana, there's yoga, and there's bhakti also. This gives the final conclusion, Bhagavad Gita. So because of that, it is considered Upanishad in the sense of essence of the Vedas. The Brahma Sutra is also a more specific in that it takes different verses from the Upanishads, like the Chandogya Upanishad, and then we'll explain the meaning of it, or certain concepts from the Upanishads, we'll discuss them and then come to a conclusion to clarify that ultimately everything is related to Supreme Lord. So it's a little more technical in nature, using logic. Whereas Bhagavad Gita is more of a explanation of everything in the Vedas and Upanishads.